This is the son of PCJ.
On shortwave, AM, FM, and the internet, this is PCJ. Yeah! It's now time for the Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perrone.
Oh, no!
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome again to another edition of your program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. Today, we begin a very special series that will continue for 8 weeks, right until the month of March. And that is a retrospective look at Radio Netherlands, their complete history. It was a series that was produced for their 50th anniversary by the late Piet Myers. Now, there is a reason for running this series until the month of March, and I'll tell you about it with this song. Now, I'm not singing it. It's actually Frank Ifield, and maybe it might, well, spark a little hint about why we're doing it. Frank Ifield, I Remember You.
I remember you. You're the one who made my dreams come true a few kisses ago. I remember you. You're the one who said I love you too. Yes, I do. Didn't you know? I remember too a distant bell and stars that fell like the rain out of the blue. And my life is through and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all. Then I will tell them I remember. Distant bell and stars that fell just like the rain out of the blue. And my life is through and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all. Then I will tell them I remember.
Frank Ifield, I remember you beginning today's edition of Happy Station, and there's a reason why I played that song. Well, first, as I mentioned at the top of the program, we are going to begin a series today that was produced by the late Piet Myers for the 50th anniversary of Radio Netherlands. It's an 8-part series, and this will continue running until the month of March. Now, this is sort of a lead-up, A lead up to what, you might ask? Well, this March, March 2013, will be my fourth anniversary hosting the Happy Station Show, and also the fourth anniversary of the show coming back. That's coming up in the month of March, and we will have a special program for that. But I'm not going to tell you anything yet. You'll have to tune in then to find out what it is. And to keep abreast, as they say, of further development, you can always find us online at www.pcjmedia.com. So get to the website, and you'll find out what we have for that program. Okay, let's now have a little bit more music before we continue. And this is a CD that we played a few weeks ago, and I thought that we'd play another track from it again. It is the Tommy Newsom Big Band, or as it's called, Tommy Newsom and the LA Big Band All-Stars. Tommy Newsom, some of you may remember as one of the sax players and also the director of the Tonight Show Band when Doc Severinsen was away. And this was a recording that was made in 1996, and it's absolutely fantastic. And by the way, there is, I should mention, a Tom Meyer connection. And you're saying, wait, did Tom ever work with Tommy Newsom? No. Did he ever work with the LA Big Band All-Stars? No. Did he ever work with the vocalist on the album, David Searing? No. But he did work with its producer, Tom McCabe. Tom, as you may know or may not know, this is some time ago, released an album called Hey Listen. And it was an album that he recorded in Atlanta in the United States. And the producer was Tom McCabe. In fact, Tom and Tim, TT, worked together on a song. What song is that? Well, we'll play it on today's show towards the end. But first, here's Tommy Newsom, the LA Big Band All-Stars, and Something's Gotta Give.
When an irresistible force such as you meets an old immovable object like me, you can bet as sure as we live, something's gotta give, something's gotta give, something's gotta give. When an irrepressible smile such as yours warms an old implacable heart such as mine, don't say no because I insist. Somewhere, somehow, someone's gonna be kissed. So on guard, who knows what the fates have in store. From their vast, mysterious sky, I'll try hard, ignoring those lips I adore. But how long can anyone try? Fight, 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 fight it with all of our might. Chances are some heavenly star-spangled night we'll find out as sure as we live. Try hard, ignoring those lips I adore. But how long can anyone try? Fight, 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 fight it with all of our might. Chances are some heavenly star-spangled night we'll find out as sure.
Tommy Newsom and the LA Big Band All-Stars with Something's Gotta Give from an album called I Remember You, Johnny, featuring the songs of Johnny Mercer. You're listening to your program, Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We now bring you part one of a anniversary look that was produced for the 50th anniversary of Radio Netherlands, looking at its history. It's presented by Pete Myers.
50 is a major milestone in everybody's life. Here in the Netherlands, there's a delightful tradition attached to that signpost. When a man reaches 50, we celebrate as Abraham. When a woman attains that magical half century, we say she has reached her Sarah. Abraham and Sarah, the two symbols of maturity, wisdom, and grace. Shortwave broadcasting from the Netherlands is 70 years old, but this year, Radio Netherlands celebrates its 50th anniversary. And none of this would have been possible without the exceptional support, participation, and critical appreciation of our worldwide audience. So, in a sense, this is our celebration, yours and mine. And before proceeding down this road of memory, let me light this candle to the past.
Period. In fact, since the closing years of the last century, I had striven to give the world improved and cheaper means of communication by electrical transmissions through space. It is natural that I should also have devoted considerable time and research to methods which would bring distant countries of the world into closer and more intimate touch with one another.
That voice on a scratchy disc from the archive is the voice of Guillermo Marconi, the father of radio who pioneered the first radio signal across the Atlantic in 1901. In the early days of this new medium, when European nations clung tenaciously to their empires around the globe, there dawned the possibility of communication between the European countries and their colonies and possessions overseas. In Holland, the Philips Company of Eindhoven began to manufacture radio tubes as early as 1917. In 1927, the Dutch were the first European nation to set up a regularly scheduled international broadcasting station, PCJJ, in Eindhoven.
Goedemorgen, goedemiddag, goedenavond. Hier is Holland, de Nederlandse kerkengolfzender PCJJ van Philips Radio op 19,71 meter met een experimentele uitzending. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners and friends everywhere, this is Holland calling again. We do wish you a very good reception, and we're very anxious to hear from you how the reception turns out to be lately in Australia and New Zealand.
And then, in 1928, Eddie Starts began his Happy Station, claiming that PCJ stood for peace, cheer, and joy, the happy station of a friendly nation. The program became a Sunday institution that lasted 6.5 decades, but during his years, as the host of that program, over 40 years in fact, Eddie Starts became a shortwave legend.
This is station PCJ of Philips Radio, broadcasting on 31 meters, our weekly Friday program, which only lasts for 60 minutes. ¶¶
The original Happy Station, Sigtune. In 1937, the government appointed an investigative commission which suggested the setting up of an overseas service made up of domestic broadcasting services, but with a small staff of its own. But before this could be implemented, World War II intervened. The internal radio societies, four separate companies with church or political affiliations, were by the onset of war well established. During the Nazi occupation, their facilities were taken over and used by the Germans, and many of their staff continued to operate the stations. This was later to cause conflict and recriminations that lasted for many years. When war broke out, a Dutch newspaper correspondent based in Paris, Hendrik van den Broek, got together with a group of colleagues and set up a clandestine radio station using French facilities. But before the Germans could close in on them, he and his team moved to London and joined Radio Oranje, or Radio Orange, the official voice of the Dutch government in exile, using BBC facilities at Bush House, London.
Goedenavond, luisteraars in Nederland, in Oost en West, op Poel, op Waarop ter wereld. Deze uitzending, luisteraars, is grotendeels gewijd.
In Holland's darkest hour, Radio Oranje was not only indispensable to the Dutch resistance, but boosted morale of the nation. By the autumn of 1944, the scent of Allied victory was spreading across Europe, and with the liberation of the south of Holland, van den Broek and his team moved home and set up a station, Horizon Nederland, based in Eindhoven. This is how it announced the capitulation of the Germans.
Hier is Horizon Nederland. Landgenoten, thans is het ogenblik gekomen waarop wij u het definitieve einde van den oorlog in Europa kunnen aankondigen. Zojuist hebben wij het volgende telegram ontvangen.
With the war ended, van den Broek, with the military rank of major, took possession of the domestic broadcasting facilities in Hilversum, a move that was to alienate him with the broadcasting societies virtually till his death. The renowned Dutch historian Lou de Jong, who broadcast a weekly column for 20 years on Radio Netherlands, outlined the dilemma facing broadcasting immediately after the war.
We had a very typically Dutch system of organization of broadcasting that was set up by law in 1930. You might say that there were four distinct groups of people in the Netherlands, the Catholics, the Protestants, the socialists and the liberals, we use that term in a very wide sense. And as a result, there were four main broadcasting organizations, which, by the way, still are in existence. And a considerable number of people felt already in the 30s that there was, too much antagonism, not sufficient stressing of national unity in that broadcasting system. And I would say that if at the time of deliberation a referendum had been held whether people wanted a return of the pre-war broadcasting system or the setting up of a sort of BBC in the Netherlands, a big majority would have voted in favor of a Dutch BBC. But specifically on the part of the Catholic Church, there was a strong conviction that the Catholic Broadcasting Organization, Katholieke Radio Omroep, the KRO, should return. And as I see it, that settled the issue. Van den Broek, personally, was much in favor of the setting up of a BBC, but early in 1946, some 8 or 9 months after liberation, it was absolutely clear that the pre-war broadcasting system would return in the Netherlands. By that time, there were considerable personal antagonisms between him and the leading figures of the pre-war broadcasting organization. And the result was that he had to be content with the position of director of Radio Nederland Wereldomroep.
Thus becoming the founding father of this organization. In 1946, a new broadcasting foundation was set up, which was Radio Netherlands in its transition. One of its sections was a world service. Van den Broek immediately began to lobby The Hague for a totally independent organization and eventually got his way. His philosophy for our existence was plain and simple.
There are really two reasons for the existence of Radio Nederland, and we do our work in two ways. Through our foreign language transmissions, and through our transcription service, which produces and records programs on any phase of Dutch life and culture, we try to tell the rest of the world about life in the Netherlands, our institutions and traditions. The other reason for our existence is our broadcasts in the Dutch language. As you know, many thousands of our countrymen emigrate each year to find a new life in a strange land. It's our aim, in our Dutch broadcasts, to supply a link between the homeland and the new country, to try to ease the shock of the completely new environment by providing news and entertainment straight from home.
The man to whom we owe our existence, Radio Netherlands first director Hendrik van den Broek. In four converted villas in Hilversum, operations began. In due time, foreign language departments were created. Van Dulken, soon to become head of the English department, recalls our first English language transmissions.
The first one, I did it myself. I started at 6 o'clock in the morning editing a news bulletin of 10 minutes. That's all we had at the time. And one of my colleagues, we were four on the staff at the time, wrote a sort of commentary. And that was about 10 minutes as well. And the whole thing of about 20 minutes went on the air at 10:30 in the morning here, which was good enough for the Pacific. And then in the evening at 7 o'clock, we had a similar broadcast, updated a little bit as far as the news was concerned, but with the same talk for Europe, especially Britain. And then one broadcast at the early hours, I think of about 3 o'clock in the morning, for the United States. We were four editors, since we only had news and no other programs. We didn't have any music except for the opening and closing tune. Mm-hmm. And we did shifts, about 8-hour shifts. So that's the way we worked.
Radio Netherlands arrived on the international map at the tail end of the golden age of radio. And with the inclusion of feature programming, our transmission time increased. As our history reveals, the first years of our existence were plagued by internal problems. Radio Netherlands was in constant conflict with the domestic broadcasting companies, much of it caused by their personal antagonism towards Van den Broek. A former director of this network, Joop Agda, explains why.
Well, you shouldn't forget that the war plays an important role. During 5 years, radio in the Netherlands, television didn't exist at that moment, radio was taken over by the Germans. So there was quite an hesitation by the first Dutch government, which took over after the war, about the personnel that had served radio during the war. So what they did is they let radio be taken over by a kind of military branch of the Dutch government, the information military branch of the government, of which Mr. van den Broek was a major. I mean, he had a rank of major. And so he had the disagreeable task at a certain moment just after the war to remove all those officials from their own studios. And, of course, that's not a way to make yourself very popular. And it's not a thing which is which people soon forget. So that's one of the reasons why he had a difficulty in the beginning to get on. Secondly, the internal radio thought itself that it would do, that it would be, they were prepared to do the world broadcast themselves. And they didn't want a separate, independent company to do that. That was the second reason. And the third reason is a reason which always exists. I mean, in order to set up a radio station, you need money, and in order to get money, you have to go somewhere. In this case, the government in The Hague, and the governments are not so easy to give money, so that's why he had to go to The Hague so often, to get more money.
And he got it, as the Netherlands was then engrossed in a last gasp bid to hang on to its colony in the East Indies and realize the value of having its reasoning for hanging on to emerging Indonesia voiced in the public domain. As a propaganda ploy, it failed. But our programming in those early post-war years was conservative, safe, and decidedly low-key, using the BBC World Service as a role model.
the trouble which soon after the war we had with the colonies who wanted to be independent, which in one case, Netherlands Indies, developed into almost a full-scale war. So, I mean, you report at such moments, I think, a bit more low-key than you do in other times. But not only that, I mean, the staff of Radio Nederland, which came immediately after the war here, was a staff which, for maybe 90%, had been, during the war, in London. Mm-hmm. They broadcast there by permission of the BBC in Bush House. So the stamp of the BBC was quite clear on that staff which came over to Holland. And apart from that, they liked that style. I mean, they liked the style of understatement, the English understatement, more than the exuberant way we had in some European countries. And certainly you could hear those exuberant method of doing radio during the war by the Germans. Indeed. So it was a reflex on what had happened to us during the war, I think. Mm-hmm. So, and the understatement, I think, still exists more or less in the presentation of Radio Nederland program. You have to take into account also that we are not the navel of the world. I mean, it's a relatively small country. I mean, and in order to present yourself, I think you have to do it in a more or less modest way in order to be convincing. I mean, not saying everything which comes from the Netherlands is so important and so good.
And with that in mind, we began to shape our own style, an image to match our modesty. Naturally, we turned to those cultural symbols that instantly identified us. Mm-hmm, you guessed it. Windmills, wooden clogs, barrel organs, and tulips.
Yes, that was because people in other countries knew the Netherlands was a country of windmills and wooden shoes and tulips, a sort of trademark. And we kept that in on purpose, because when we did programs, I'm talking now, of course, of later programs, when we did programs that did not include that sort of information, people weren't interested in other countries. They say, oh, well, that's just the kind of program that any country could make. Italy isn't Dutch, you know. So I programmed with the little boy putting his finger in the dike, that sort of thing. That's what they wanted to hear. But along with that, that was only the packaging. We just interwove the information in that.
By the 50s, we had established our image with a global shortwave audience who were curious and fascinated by our culture, social development, and universal concerns, and especially by our style of presentation. Now, it's often thought that those hallmarks of Radio Netherlands, friendliness, openness, and warmth, started to emerge in the 60s and 70s. But as Bert Steenkamp, a former head of programs, recalls...
That was much earlier. I think it was there from the start. Successive generations of program producers and presenters in this house have found a way of being relevant in their presentation to people, whatever the generations were. And I think that's a hallmark of this house, that we are not a nation talking unto a nation. We are people talking to people.
And if there was one thing the people appreciated, it was our independence of thought. Though state-funded, government interference has never been a problem, as Joop Agda, former director, explains.
I was there, as you know, during the period from 1946 till 1984. And as far as I know, there have been only two times where we had dealings with The Hague, the seat of our government, mm-hmm. and in a way which pleased us very much. One way was an official letter by the then dictator of Argentina, Mr. Perón, mm-hmm. who didn't like the way in which we did our Spanish broadcast directed to Latin America, and protested officially via his ambassador in The Hague. I had one telephone call with the Undersecretary of Foreign Affairs, and we agreed in 5 minutes that there should be a letter given back to the ambassador so that he could present it again to Mr. Perron, saying that unfortunately he had addressed himself to the wrong address. He shouldn't address himself to the Foreign Affairs Department of the Netherlands, but he should address himself to Radio Nederland Wereldomroep. And so it happened. So, I mean, we never got another indication of Argentina, what they thought about it. We never got a letter either, but that was that.
Over the years, there's been the occasional hiccup, but none has ever threatened our jealously guarded independence. Apart from our programming, our transcription service, which distributes program material to all corners of the globe, has played an important role in our success. Bert Steinkamp, who once headed our transcription outlet, outlined its growth and purpose.
It means expressions of Dutch culture through radio, high-quality recordings going to radio stations everywhere in the world as long as they are interested and as long as they are broadcasting it, because the actual broadcast of such material is, of course, a condition. So music, classical, light, the traditional distinction, jazz, pop as subgroups, which became increasingly important. The word, the cultural word in plays, in short stories, in poetry, in contests on such subjects. A fairly huge market coming from a small country, and also in comparison to many of our sister organizations in other countries. I remember figures like 150,000, 160,000 program copies per year, going a lot to developed countries, but since the 60s, a totally new market, the third world countries or the developing countries or the newly independent nations or whatever you want to call them, where a totally new format of programming was developed for what we perceive to be the needs of such countries. Of course, we made mistakes because there was nothing to go by. The countries were very, very young. They were trying to find their own definitions, and so were we. But in quite a number of respects, we have been doing very well with such operations. And the taking up of the programs in many of the countries and in many of the languages we did, also languages in which we did not broadcast, has been colossal.
The magnificent Concertgebouw Orchestra, whose music via our transcription unit was brought to hundreds of radio stations worldwide. Recordings that are distinguished by their high technical quality, a quality also reflected in our programming. Change has naturally played a key role in our evolution, with major changes beginning in the late 60s, when our relay stations in Bonaire and Madagascar came online. This brought our message to large audiences in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. It was also obvious that if we were to compete on the international airwaves, we would have to flow with the times. In the decade of liberation, revolution, youth culture, and sexual freedom, our programming, which was entertainment-based, began sounding old-fashioned. It was time for a major overhaul, putting the emphasis on information and news.
From the Radio Netherlands newsroom, this is Newsline, analysis and background reports on current affairs.
And with the launch of Newsline, we developed a distinctly Dutch perspective on international developments. The 70s and 80s were marked by feature programs renowned for their openness, candidness, and friendly styling. But by the beginning of the 90s, as production costs soared, it was apparent that if we were to maintain our market share of the audience, it was time to develop a multimedia approach to broadcasting. One of the architects of our present structure and current director of programs, Jonathan Marks, explains the reason for our change of direction.
It was to restructure and to refocus. many international broadcasters have started, and Radio Netherlands is a perfect example, by first of all having technical facilities. People built transmitter sites. As a result, we reached a group of people. And nobody really sat down with the serious question, okay, but what's the message to these people? And we turn it round by saying it is now technically possible to reach most parts of the world because of satellite technology, for instance. So you must start by saying, what's the message? Who do you want to reach? And what's the best method, the media mix of radio, television and internet, of reaching those groups of people? Now, in some parts of the world, shortwave broadcasting is still very important and will remain so, let's say, for the next 10 years. In other parts of the world, you must now start building new ways of reaching groups of people because they're switching their shortwave radios off. There is competing media, which is taking those people away. And the reason for the reorganization was to refocus to make sure that each language service, whether it be a broadcast service like English or, for example, the French service, which is now very much cooperation rather than direct transmission, that the money put into those projects was actually worthwhile.
Getting our message across is no longer a solitary business. Unity and cooperation are the key words in Europe today. And we have embarked on an extensive program of cooperation with other external broadcasters. How important is that approach?
It's essential to our future. Radio Netherlands will not survive on its own. I think we realized that maybe 15, 20 years ago when we started sending out tapes to radio stations in the hope that they would broadcast them. We also realized that feedback from those stations was important. And through the internet, through satellite communications, in fact, we're not just busy with a one-way tape distribution service, we're actually busy with co-productions. That's the future. It's going to be a mixture of direct transmissions where we have our own facilities to reach listeners directly or viewers directly, and also a very important part of our work, working with other stations, sharing information. And that's why I think our charter helps us, because we're in the business of sharing, not shouting.
Radio Netherlands, the European station with a Dutch accent.
And a European station which has to grapple with the uncertainties of our modern times. Ludovic Bowers is director of Radio Netherlands, and as we head into the third millennium, he has to have the vision to chart our course into the future. So how does he see our future development?
It won't be as easy as the last 50 years, that's for sure. It'll be more and more difficult to be different from the other stations. One of the special things of Radio Netherlands, I think, in the past has always been that we are different from all the other international broadcasters. On the other hand, the new media, the fact that shortwave, although already 10 years everybody said it would be the end of shortwave, it won't be the end. Shortwave will be important, but new media like television, we are developing a television station at the moment. And also in this television station, I think we should be different from other stations. Different in a way that you look for a special audience, you look for a target group that's not competing with other target groups. Well, the Dutch are different from a lot of other people, and I think that's shown in our programming as well.
Over the last half century, we've had many directors who've guided us on a path to where we are today, and all of them have had their own philosophy and had their key words and images of this organization. You're the man now in charge, and I wonder, what are your key words to describe the purpose of this organization?
The first purpose, of course, will be certainly in the next century giving an image of the Netherlands as a European country. And I think a small country like the Netherlands have a role. The fact that the Ministry of Foreign Trade of the Netherlands gave us an award, not because we promote Dutch foreign trade, but just because we give an image of the Netherlands as a responsible country, as a modern country. And I think spreading this image will be one of our first tasks. And as a matter of fact, it doesn't differ that much from the way we looked at it the last 50 years. But the way we'll do it will be different.
Different, yes. But never indifferent to the concerns of our global audience. A caring vision shaped by all the talented broadcasters who've made our existence possible for 50 years. And beside the candle to our past, here's one to our future. And having lit it, let its gentle glow guide us into a future of promise and achievement.
And that was the first program in the eight-part series that we're running until the month of March, looking at the history of Radio Netherlands. Now, before we listen to that, I told you that the Tommy Newsom recording that we took a listen to had a connection with Tom Meyer. And the only connection, of course, was with the producer, Tim McCabe. Now, when Tom recorded his album in Atlanta in the United States, they actually worked on a song together that was on the album Hey Listen. It's called Open Up Your Heart, and it's performed in English and French. Here's Tom Meyer.
Love, when it shows, is a rare and beautiful thing. Like a flower, see how it grows and blossoms in the spring. And I feel the need inside of me to open up for all the world to see. Could it be that me and me has finally decided to be free? Let the love flow, let the spirit free. Let the love that's locked within your heart come forth for everyone to see. L'amour dans mon cœur est une chose belle et précieuse. C'est une plante, une fleur, une chanson, plutôt une berceuse. Je veux montrer au monde entier ce qui constitue ma personnalité. Comme chaque homme, je suis comme un enfant qui cherche la tendresse et la bonté. Fais sortir l'amour, fais ouvrir ton cœur. Laisse sortir l'amour qui est dans ton âme et il apportera un grand bonheur. Just open up your heart and let the spirit free. Give a little of yourself and I just know you'll see. You've made the world a better place to be. Open up your heart and let the spirit free. Let the love that's deep inside you flow out naturally.
Tom Meyer, Open Up Your Heart, a song that he wrote with Tim McCabe, who also produced that recording. You're listening to your program, Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. You're always welcome to write us. Our email address, of course, is hs@pcjmedia.com. That's hs@pcjmedia.com. And if you want to listen to this program again, as well as catch past editions and subscribe to it in iTunes and Stitcher and other ways, go to www.pcjmedia.com. That's www.pcjmedia.com. Let's see. What do we have next? Oh, more music. Yes. This was a song, actually, that was requested back in December. And the only reason why we're only getting to it now, because I was away and some of the programs had been pre-recorded. Normally we record the show the week that it goes out. But the holiday season just kind of threw that schedule outside the window. And let me see if I can find it here. Ah, yes, here it is. Her name is Sophie, and her last name is just Sophie. No, Sophie Fay. Sophie Fay. And she lives in Wellington in New Zealand. And she wants to hear Shirley Bassey singing a song that was made popular by the Beatles, Something. So here's something for you, Sophie.
Attracts me like no other lover. Something in the way he woos me. I don't want to leave him now. No, I believe in how. Somewhere in his smile he knows that I don't need.
This is PCJ Radio on 88.2 FM. This is PCJ Radio on 107.5 FM in Nairobi, Kenya. And nationwide on 5. This is PCJ Radio on KBCT in Waco, Texas. This is PCJ Radio on 99.55 kHz to Latin America. This is PCJ Radio on 7590 kHz DRM. On shortwave, satellite, and the Internet. This is PCJ Radio.
Jeannie and Johnny both grew up together, playmates each hour of the day. They both vowed that they would be sweethearts forever. Then one day Jeannie moved away. Johnny was lonely. Love Jeannie only, said forget it, but Jeannie and Johnny both knew that no other would do. They wrote to each other, and as they grew older, their love much stronger had grown. Then one day a letter from Jeannie to Johnny came back to her address unknown. Jeannie was lonely, loved Johnny only, her heart was sad and so blue. Where Johnny had gone to, she knew not the answer, but she knew she'd wait and be true. Next day, poor Jeannie just couldn't stop crying, though tears wouldn't come anymore. Her world seemed so empty that she felt like dying. Then she heard a knock on her door. And there stood her Johnny, her true love, and Johnny, he'd come to make the wedding plan. He said, I love you, my Jeannie, I love you. Then he placed the ring on her hand. He placed the ring on her hand.
Jeannie and Johnny, country western singer Marty Robbins, with Ray Conniff and his group, produced by Mitch Miller. You know, I was reading the names of the other musicians that were on that session. And I mean, it's a whole show in itself. It's a whole show in itself to read about. It's like a who's who almost. Anyway, that's it. That's all we have time for on this week's edition of the program. If you wish to contact us again, our email address is hs@pcjmedia.com. So until next time, friends, this is Keith Parent wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and sayonara.